Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Doster. It is Monday morning, October 1st. I have a good show on the way for you today. Scott Phillips, my colleague at NBCSports.com, and I went through the entire ACC from Boston College all the way down to Wake Forest, breaking down what to expect from every single team while providing you with a bold prediction on what will happen this season. It's good. It's entertaining. It's a little bit long. Should be about 75 minutes. I think that you are going to get a lot out of it. We went through every single team in the conference. We touched on all the major storylines. So please give it a listen. If you do enjoy what you hear on this podcast today, I have to make the usual ask. Please rate. Please review. Please subscribe to the podcast. Any interaction that you have with this podcast and the app that you listen to podcasts in, it really does help. It boosts us in the metrics. It gets us up higher in the ratings. And it's something that makes me look good in the eyes of my bosses. So please, if you do enjoy this podcast, throw us a bone, give us a rating, give us a review. Thank you. And let's get into that conversation with Scott Phillips and our ACC preview. And now let me welcome on Scott Phillips, the newest married man that is a member of the NBC Sports College Basketball Talk team. Scott, what's going on, my man? How you doing? Are you regretting the decision to get married yet?
No, not regretting it at all. Things are going swimmingly so far, and I'm saying that because my wife is likely listening to this. But yeah, married life is wonderful. We had a great experience with the wedding, tremendous honeymoon in Italy and Greece, and yeah, it was great to kind of refresh the batteries a little bit before the season begins here.
So at my wedding, the person that was making our cake forgot to make the cake. They had to rush to make the cake. On the day of, it didn't show up until like 10:30 the night of the wedding, and it was a little bit of a disaster. What was your wedding horror story? Because everybody has one.
We lost our wedding license because the restaurant where we had our ceremony and reception misplaced it. So we weren't legally married until well after a month after the ceremony because we couldn't find the marriage license. So Megan was freaking out, my wife, a little bit just about that, about the official aspect of it and health insurance and things like that. And obviously it's not a pleasant feeling when something goes missing like that and you're out of the country not having to deal with it. But yeah, it all... It resolved itself, and all's well that ends well. So, you know, other than that, everything went really well.
So let's get into the ACC. People that are listening to this probably are aware of the format for how we do these conference previews. We're going to go through every single team. We're going to go through alphabetical order, and we're going to talk a little bit about that team and what a bold prediction is for that team. We're going to switch off who's talking about what, and we're going to dive into it with Boston College. But before I do that, Scott, you wrote the preview for the ACC for College Basketball Talk. It is up on the site right now. It's 4,000 words of ACC college basketball goodness. So go read it. Check that out. It's really worth your time. What was the most surprising thing as you were writing that you found about the ACC that maybe you didn't realize before? What was like the one takeaway you had when you were writing that thing?
I guess the biggest takeaway for me, Rob, is that so much of the talent is returning that we don't really talk about in terms of the non-pro prospects and things like that. You look at the league from top to bottom and some of the second-tier teams like Clemson and Florida State and Syracuse maybe even in there as well. And a lot of these teams made runs in the tournament last year and returned the bulk of their rosters. And that's not something that we've really discussed a lot this offseason. It seems like with college basketball, we're always discussing the sexy new freshman prospects and who's really emerging in that top five, but we're not talking about the mid-tier teams that are filled with veterans that wind up doing well and wind up winning a lot of games in March. And I think the ACC has a lot of those teams this year.
Yeah, and we'll get into it. It is a really, really, really deep league this season. So I will start things off with Boston College. Last year, they actually kind of had a little bit of a surprising season. They finished 7-11 in the ACC, which is pretty good considering where Jim Christian was earlier in his tenure. And it looked like they were going to end up being an NCAA tournament team heading into this season, but they lost Jerome Robinson, a lottery pick, the number 13 pick to the Clippers a year early to the NBA draft. That kind of limits what their ceiling could end up being this season. They do return Kai Bowman, who has a chance to end up being an All-American. And they have a couple of, I don't know if talented is the right word, but they have a couple of experienced big men coming back in Nick Popovich and Stephen Mitchell. And I do think that Jordan Chapman is probably a little bit of an underrated piece that they have. I just don't know where the depth is. I don't know if I actually trust anybody in the front court. And while Jim Christian is actually one of the better offensive minds when it comes to X's and O's in college basketball, I just don't know if they can actually guard. And I think we've seen that over and over and over again. So I would not be surprised to see them once again finish somewhere outside of like the top 175 in KenPom's defensive efficiency metric. And that's not going to win you a lot of basketball games, not when the ACC is as good as it is this year. So my bold prediction is that Kai Bowman is going to lead the ACC in scoring, and he's going to finish top three nationally in points per game, but it's only going to be enough to get Boston College a return trip to the NIT. Scott, you have them 11th in your ACC preseason power rankings. Did I say anything wrong there? What do you think of Boston College?
Not at all, Rob. I liked your assessment of this team, and having them 11th is no slight to them whatsoever. Remember, keep in mind, we have eight teams that made our NBC Sports preseason top 25, so a third of our top 25 is the ACC, and for a team like Boston College to have NIT expectations after losing a talented piece like Jerome Robinson, I think it speaks to the depth that they have returning here this year. I think that with Robinson in the lineup, we were talking about them as a potential top 25 sleeper team for this preseason. He's now gone as a lottery pick. And as you said, Rob, I think a lot of this falls on Kai Bowman's shoulders this season.
Yeah, he's going to be fun to watch. He's going to put up a lot of points, and it's not going to translate to all that many wins. The good news, as we'll get to, is there are a lot of really bad teams at the bottom of the ACC as well. So I don't think we're looking at a last place finish for Boston College. I just don't know if they're going to have enough to get to the tournament. But let's move on. Scott, talk to me about Clemson.
Clemson quietly made the Sweet 16 last season under Brad Brownell, who took himself off the hot seat in the process, finally broke through and made the NCAA tournament after that drought, making it the first year there. And year eight now, things look bright as well. A lot of this team returning from last season. They lose Gabe DeVoe, a double-figure score in the perimeter. Dante Grantham is gone as well, but they played without Grantham down the stretch last season after he sustained a season-ending injury, so they should be accustomed to being without him already. DeVoe, on the other hand, is going to be a bigger loss. He was averaging around 35 minutes a game, but I think the really good thing with this Clemson team is that they are a stout defensive unit. They were top 10 in KenPom last year, and they have one of the most veteran starting lineups that you will see in the country this season. Their backcourt of Marquise Reed and Shelton Mitchell are both fifth-year seniors, guys who have been around for a lot of games and seen a lot of wars in the ACC. They are going to be ready for whatever they face, and I think this is one of the more underrated units that we see across college basketball. Both Reed and Mitchell are double-figure scorers. They can both make plays for others. I think that Reed acclimated nicely to the ACC after his transfer, and that's definitely the bright spot for this Tigers team. But there's a lot of veterans in the front court as well. Elijah Thomas is back in the middle. He's a double-figure scorer who can get rebounds and clear the glass as well. Maybe not as nimble as you'd like to see from certain big men, but he is adequate in terms of being able to defend down in the interior. So again, he's back, and he's a senior as well, so this is a veteran lineup. David Scarra was supposed to go pro but came back. He gives them another weapon who's experienced and should shoot a little bit better than he did last season. His numbers dipped a little bit. And Amir Sims is an intriguing sophomore to watch who earned a lot of minutes last season when Grantham went down. He's kind of a dynamo defensive presence who's a little bit of versatility there, who gives Clemson another big body who can really be a matchup problem on the defensive end. And a lot to like with this starting five. Depth is going to be the major question for this Clemson team. Obviously, replacing DeVoe is going to be a big deal. They have to figure that out. But there really isn't much of a bench in place in terms of a guy that you can look to come in and be a spark plug. They have a couple freshmen who are intriguing to watch. John Newman in particular, I liked coming out. He was a three-star guard who could fill it up a little bit. Javon White is a nice graduate transfer from Oral Roberts who should be able to eat up some minutes on the interior for Thomas. But outside of that, I really don't know who comes off the bench consistently. Clyde Trapp gave some minutes last year on the perimeter. This is kind of a unit that is needing somebody to step up here and take the reins, and that's really my biggest thing with Clemson. My bold prediction is I think they fall short of the Sweet 16 this year. I think that people are going to be accustomed to what Clemson's bringing to the table. There's question marks replacing DeVoe's scoring, and I think that they have a lot of opportunities to make a run in the ACC, but ultimately they'll fall short of last season.
Yeah, my thing with them is maybe like Northwestern syndrome. I don't know if that's
exactly
the right way to phrase
it. Just people know who they are now, and they're going to be the hunted instead of being the surprise team that nobody really talks about making the Sweet 16. No, they're not sneaking up on anybody this year.
Yeah, they're going to play a little bit differently this year, too. I mean, they're going to be forced to do it. Last year, they almost always had those three guards on the floor, Reed, Mitchell, and DeVoe. And what they did was kind of play a little bit of small ball with Dante Grantham at the four. And when you look at it, like, so I think in addition to the depth and in addition to finding a way to play a little bit bigger, I think they're going to have a lot of minutes with Skara and Sims on the floor together. It's going to be how Amir Sims ends up developing. Like, if you look at Brad Brunell's best teams, they've always had that, like, super dynamic, borderline NBA level combo forward at the four, whether it was KJ McDaniels or who was the guy that the Spurs
Jerron Blossom game.
Yeah, Jerron Blossom game. Yeah. Dante Grantham. And then Amir Sims is the guy. He's kind of in that same mold, same kind of player, can shoot it a little bit, can guard different positions, has some size, has some strength, has a little bit of athleticism. So how he fits in sliding into that four spot is going to be something that I think will determine their ceiling as well. I think they're going to be good. I think you hit it spot on, though. I don't know if they're going to be quite as good as they were last season. I think Brunell found a little bit of magic with that team. Anything else to add?
Yeah, I really like the addition of Marty Simmons to their staff, the former Evansville coach. That should really help on the offensive end, especially. This is a guy who's won a lot of 20-win seasons at Evansville and had a winning record there over a decade. So I think that, again, having an addition like that only helps. And Clemson needs to have Sims really hit, as you mentioned, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, they were a top-10 team defensively last year, and they were outside the top 40 offensively, and they lost one of their best scores. Two of their best scores, actually, when you factor in Grantham. So there's a good floor to work with and a good group to work with, but it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Ready to move on?
Absolutely.
Let's go to Duke. I'm going to talk about Duke, who is one of the more fascinating teams of all freshmen and all recruits that I can remember seeing in a long time. They are kind of built in like this small ball way, which is what Villanova did last season and which is what Golden State has kind of turned into the cheat code in the NBA. They have four freshmen that are going to start. All four are top 12, top 15 recruits. Trey Jones at the point, then RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Zion Williamson, who are all going to end up being somewhere between that like combo point to power forward position. Maybe even Zion Williamson will play the five. They have a lot of those three are all going to be guys that are kind of their definition is positionless, right? Like they're all about 6'8". They're all varying degrees of athletic. Zion is a guy that can play with the ball in his hands. RJ is probably more of a point guard than anything else. Cam Reddish is a guy that wants to have the ball in his hands as well. He's more, correct me if I'm wrong, you've seen him play more than I have, but he's more of a scorer, I think, than either of those two are. So you have three guys that are all 6'8 and athletic that are going to be able to guard multiple positions on the floor at the same time, along with either someone like a Marquise Bolden or Javon Delorier at the five, or an Alex O'Connell who can push Zion Williamson to the five. So what you have is this group of really, really talented guys that kind of fits the mold of this switchable, positionless, small ball. And you know what, a quick little rant here and allow me to do this. I hate the idea that it's just called small ball, right? Because it's not necessarily teams going small. It's skill ball. It's going to, if you look at Golden State, right, Kevin Durant is a 7-footer. Every team in the NBA has a 7-footer on the roster. It's just that Golden State 7-footer happens to be a shooting guard, where most teams have a 7-footer that happens to be a center, right? So it's not like they're going smaller, they're getting more skilled. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing a little bit with this Duke team. And my question for them on the offensive end particularly is going to end up being how well they can actually shoot the ball. Because I think if you look at RJ Barrett and you look at Zion Williamson and you look at Trey Jones, those are probably the three most the guys are going to have the ball in their hands the most. And all three of those guys are somewhere between not very good shooters and like okay. I don't think you can project any of them to be better than something like maybe a 35, 40% three-point shooter this season. And even Cam Reddish is a guy who is going to be he's not known for being a guy that makes threes, for being a floor spacer. He's a guy that can make shots, and he's more of a scorer. Correct?
He's very streaky.
So how can you end up playing the small ball, skill ball, spaced out style, pace and space, when you don't actually have the guys that can necessarily space the floor? Like, that's something that's going to be a red flag for me. Now, with this Duke team, they may just have enough talent that it won't matter. You know, like, even if you play 5 feet off of Zion Williamson, like, this dude is an absolute freak of nature. I can't remember a freshman that I've been more excited to see develop at the college level, right? Like, just to actually see what he's able to do, right? Because so much of what he did in high school was about just being more athletic than anybody that he was playing against. And that doesn't necessarily mean that he is a guy that's going to translate as people get closer to him, and the gap between what he can do athletically and what somebody else can do athletically kind of evens up a little bit. So seeing how he develops at the college level, how he works with RJ Barrett, whether these guys can all fit together on the same floor, whether or not they can coexist in terms of basically having three or four guys that always want to have the ball in their hands, that's going to be interesting to see. Another concern, and you can tell me if I'm reading too much into this, is that from people that I've talked to, Cam Reddish is not necessarily the most team-friendly player. I've heard from scouts that he is a guy that is a losing basketball player. He is a guy that may not necessarily work all that well if he is not the go-to guy and the biggest name on the floor and the guy getting all the shots. So seeing how he fits in with what could end up being like the number one and number two pick in the NBA draft is something else that's very interesting. And I think if you put it all together, my take on Duke is that, so I think RJ Barrett, he is our preseason player of the year. I think he's going to end the season as the national player of the year. I think Zion Williamson is going to end the season as a first team All-American. I think that RJ, Zion, and Cam Reddish are all going to end up being top six picks in the NBA draft in June. And I think that Duke is going to fail to get out of the Sweet 16 because the combination of not being able to shoot well enough, too many cooks in the kitchen, and having guys that may not necessarily fit perfectly together on the offensive end of the floor is going to be too much for them to overcome. Give me your take on Duke, and I know I went a little bit long there.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head in terms of the lineup combinations, Rob. There's so many fascinating developments that we will see with Duke throughout this season, and I don't think we're going to see a finished product or a finished rotation from them until February or March, because we're going to see development from guys like Alex O'Connell. We'll see who really separates themselves with Javon Delorier and Marquise Bolden, and if those veterans can establish themselves in what will be a freshman-dominated team. But I think one of the fascinating things about this Duke freshman classes, I don't think they're necessarily the most talented of all time, but I made the argument that they're the most famous freshman class of all time. Zion Williamson's the most famous prep star we've seen since LeBron. RJ Barrett's carrying Canadian basketball on his shoulders and has already played worldwide with the Canadian senior national team and winning a gold medal with them at the U18 level, beating the USA team. And, you know, you look at Cam Reddish and how talented he is, Trey Jones being Tyus's younger brother playing into this. And, you know, these guys are going to be ready to handle the spotlight more than your typical Duke or Kentucky freshman class, because they've already had such superstardom at the prep level that it's going to sustain over to the college level now. And it's going to be fascinating to watch this whole just season for Duke, because they have a lot of rock stars on this team.
The one thing I am really excited to see are the lineups when Duke plays Zion Williamson at the five and basically plays him in that like Draymond Green role in the death lineup. Like, I don't want to sit here and say that Zion Williamson is Draymond Green, because in my mind, Draymond Green, in terms of what he could do defensively, what he can do as a playmaker, what he can do as a shooter, and the fact that he is borderline insane and plays the way that he plays, and the fact that he might have, you know, a top five highest basketball IQ in the NBA, he's a unicorn. You just don't get another Draymond Green. Those guys don't come around all that often. So I don't know if it's fair to compare Zion Williamson to him. But in terms of the athleticism that he has, the way that he can guard people in the post, and the fact that he can kind of get a rebound, grab and go, I think that's going to be fascinating to watch how that all plays out. And I also think that this Duke team is going to end up playing all the time in transition. I would not be surprised to see them average like 90 points a game this year, just because with all that size and all that athleticism, you want to get them out on the break, especially if it comes down to a situation where you don't have the shooting to be able to space the floor, to be able to run the offense that you typically want to run. So they're going to be, I think they're going to be fun to watch. We're going to see plenty of alley-oops to Zion Williamson. He's going to be on the highlights all the time. I just don't know if this is necessarily the right combination with the right amount of depth and the right amount of role players that can actually get Duke back to a national title. Anything else to add?
No, I think, again, this is just going to be a roller coaster ride throughout the season, and we're going to be refreshing this subject quite a bit.
All right, Scott, let's move on. Tell me about Florida State.
Once again, we talk about surprise teams in the ACC, and Florida State was certainly a surprising Elite Eight run. This was not a team many people predicted to make out of the first weekend, let alone to nearly make the Final Four, and they returned much of last season's roster. There are seven guys on this roster who averaged double-figure minutes for this group last year, so a lot of veterans and a lot of guys who have already played together and won a lot of games together, so a lot to like with this Florida State team preseason. Many people have them in that preseason top 25 conversation. Getting Phil Kofor back for his fifth year of eligibility was a huge, huge thing for the Seminoles. He really blossomed into one of their go-to guys last season and really gave them a lot of versatility with his ability to stretch the floor at the four or the five. And Florida State has a lot of different lineups they can throw at you, but with Kofor back, it gives them that versatility and that stretch at the front court that they really needed. Terrence Mann is also back, a senior wing who, like Kofor, kind of blossomed into a go-to scorer last year, and one of the more efficient scorers that we have in college basketball. This is a guy who is not going to take a lot of bad shots. He doesn't need a lot of shots to score a lot of points and gets it done in a variety of different ways. He's got, I think, a 57% career field goal percentage. So a guy who's not going to take a lot of bad shots as your leading scorer is never a bad thing if you're looking at it from a Florida State perspective. And again, more talent returning on the wing in the form of MJ Walker, who's a former McDonald's All-American, who should get more minutes and more of a chance to thrive this year after a little bit of an up-and-down freshman season. Trent Forrest is going to man the point guard position after taking it over from C.J. Walker, who ended up transferring this offseason. Forrest gives them a little bit of size and athleticism at around 6'4", which, again, this Florida State team can really get out and defend with their length and athleticism at all five spots. So Forrest at the point is going to be an intriguing thing to watch from a season-long perspective, just to see what this team is able to do defensively and how they adjust offensively as well. And then you have a platoon at center with Christ Kamaji, who's at 7'4", and a senior who's been around a long time, a rim protector who hasn't really figured out things offensively yet, but he's adequate in terms of what he does for Florida State. And Mufandu Kabenegele, I just butchered that name completely, I apologize, he's also back for Florida State, and he provides them double-digit minutes as well. So between those two at the center position, it's not the sexiest. They're not going to have guys putting up double-doubles from an individual perspective, but having the two of them platoon will get things done. So you have a great seven-man rotation there. PJ Savoy is back as well, who provided shooting for them a little bit last year. And they add a couple guys as well. David Nichols, a graduate transfer who scored quite a bit of points for Albany last season, should help offset the loss of CJ Walker and be a backup point guard for them. And some intriguing freshmen to watch who redshirted as well, Raekwon Gray and Anthony Polite, guys who have athleticism who should be able to come in and be rotation pieces for what should be a very deep Florida State team. My bold prediction is that this Florida State team makes it back to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. I love their depth. I think that Walker, MJ Walker, takes a leap this season and becomes a third double-figure scorer. And you have Kofor and Mann back as reliable pieces who really know what they're doing. And I like the makeup of this group quite a bit.
I agree with everything that you just said right there. I think that that Florida State plays a style of kind of small ball basketball that we've come to enjoy. Like, I think part of the reason they made their run in the NCAA tournament is because they were able to play that like switching style and press a little bit and force some turnovers and get teams sped up. And, you know, they have athletes and old guys and a bunch. Like, it feels like every single player on their roster is kind of like the same mold, somewhere between 6'5 and 6'8, strong and athletic, and they're going to get up into you defensively. My question with them is, are we a little too bullish on them because they got hot at the right time and picked off a couple of good teams in the tournament? Because last year, I mean, they were a little bit of a surprise. Like when they were a 9 seed in last year's tournament, they were one of the teams we were like, well, how did Florida State get a 9 seed? We had them on the bubble. So I think that let me phrase it like this. It's going to be interesting to see how it kind of plays out. Like I think they're going to be good. I have them in the top 15. But I wonder if this is one of those teams where we're kind of buying a little bit too much into the hype after an NCAA tournament run. Am I reading too much into that?
I really like this team quite a bit, Rob. I liked them last year, and I think that you're overlooking the tournament run a little bit. This is a team that dismantled Florida on the road early last season. They beat Gonzaga, who many of us have in the top five preseason, by 15 in the tournament and really made that win look easy going away. And I think this team is really, really tough. I think if as long as they figure things out at the point guard with Forrest and they're able to get a third scorer in place, which I think they will with MJ Walker, that this team has a lot of different variables they can throw at you, and they're really going to defend and have the athleticism to wear you down.
Yeah, and let me just get my my plug in here for Cabin Gala. I think that he's going to end up being a guy that kind of is a breakout player. He's somebody that blocked a lot of shots at 6'8" and also shot 38% from three. So he kind of fits that mold of being a 3-and-D kind of a player and a rim protector. So I think he's a guy that is going to pop up on a lot of people's radar as the season progresses. Anything else to add?
No, I really like this group. As I said, they're deep, they're talented, they're athletic, and they play a really good style of ball where there's not a lot of shot-happy guys.
All right, so let's move on. Georgia Tech. After Josh Pastner had this team surprisingly on the verge of an NCAA tournament bid in his first season in Atlanta, it has all been downhill last year. Georgia Tech finished 13-19 overall. They went 6-12 in the ACC, and they spent the season playing with a scandal kind of hanging over the head of the program. A former friend of Josh Pastner went to the NCAA, snitched on two of their best players, levied some accusations at Josh Pastner that he had committed a sexual assault. All of it was lies. It does not appear like this guy's in any way trustworthy. And finally, it seems like that kind of cloud is going to be gone from the program. The problem is that four of their top five players are also gone from the program, and that includes first-round pick Josh Okogie and former All-ACC big man Ben Lambers. And the problem with that is that Georgia Tech really wasn't all that good last year, and they just lost all their guys that are actually good basketball players. That's not a good combination of things to have. I do like Jose Alvarado, their point guard. Assuming he comes back from that nasty elbow injury, I don't know if you remember seeing that, but it's one of those ones where he fell on the floor and kind of had his elbow bent the wrong way. It was really tough to watch. He is a sophomore. He is from, I believe he's from the Bronx. He played on that same EYBL program as Hamidou Diallo. I really, really liked him in high school. I think he's a tough kid. I think he is a good point guard for this program going forward. The problem is that I just don't know how much help he's going to end up getting. I think your long-lost cousin, Shambari Phillips, should step in and be able to help. I do think that there are a couple of young pieces on the bench that might be all right, but the bottom line is this. You know, they finished last season ranked 197th in KenPom's offensive efficiency rating, right? And they lost Josh Okogie, and they lost Ben Lambers, and they lost seemingly everybody that can actually create their own shot outside of Jose Alvarado. So I think it's going to come down to whether or not Jose Alvarado and Shambari Phillips can put up enough points to beat some of the teams in the ACC. And you know how often they're going to be beating teams in the ACC with those two guys being the ones that are trying to carry the offense for them? Not too often. The ACC is too good for that. And I think the best way to kind of sum it up is this, Scott. Like, I cover this sport for a living. You cover this sport for a living. If I were to ask you, without looking, to name five players on Georgia Tech, would you be able to do that?
Hell no. Absolutely yes. Not. I mean, this is a roster that is going to be barren, and it's not like the roster Josh Pastner inherited a couple years ago where he found pros like Okogie and Ben Lambers was talented. I mean, he's got a recruiting class that isn't nearly as hyped, and he needs to really build these next couple seasons up.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be very good, which leads me to my bold prediction that Georgia Tech and not Pitt will finish at the bottom of the ACC this year, and I think we can move on. Scott, tell me about Louisville.
Louisville finally gets to turn a new leaf. They have Chris Mack as their new head coach. They have seemingly figured things out from the whole Patino Paget NCAA issues that have been looming like a black cloud over the program, and obviously still some things to resolve over time with lawsuits and things like that. But with Mack at the helm and with the way that they're recruiting in this current class of 2019, it feels like Louisville is finally back. And going to this current 2018-2019 roster, I don't really like the makeup of this team at all. They lose their top three scorers, Deng Adel, Quentin Snyder, Ray Spalding, all veterans who are gone. Anas Mahmood, who is also a veteran in the interior, is gone as well. So you lose four guys who played a ton of minutes for this program, and you know they still only made the NIT last season. So you know VJ King returns. He's a junior who's a former McDonald's All-American who's really never lived up to the hype, and he's going to ask to be this team's leading scorer. He was the leading returning scorer already to begin with. He's the most talented senior, or you know, just upper class member of this roster, and they're really going to have to expect a lot out of VJ King in order to make any kind of dent in the ACC this year. You know, you have a couple returners as well, guys like Darius Perry, a sophomore guard who's more defensive minded, and Jordan Nwora, who gave some positive minutes as a freshman, is back at forward, and Malik Williams, who is a sweet shooting center, if you will. He prefers to shoot threes more than be on the interior, is back as well. Dwayne Sutton. But these are a lot of role guys that Louisville returns. There's not really a star presence. There's not really a go-to guy. VJ King has never shown that takeover ability that we've been waiting to see out of him these last few years. And really, Louisville wasn't able to recruit as they typically would. They're going to rely heavily on transfers. Chris Mack did a very nice job of getting some depth in place with what he had to work with. So guys like Quan Four from Richmond and Christian Cunningham from Samford should help provide a little bit of stability in the backcourt. He's got Akoya Gao coming in from SMU who returns to Louisville, you know, half a decade later. He's been around forever. And Stephen Enoch is really going to be asked to produce quite a bit as well. The former UConn big man sat out last season, had another year to develop, and they're expecting big things out of him on the interior to play alongside guys like Malik Williams. So, again, I think this Louisville team has talent on paper. These guys that they have on the roster were recruited heavily by other big programs. They have stars next to their names, but I think that they haven't really sustained actual success yet. So my bold prediction is that Chris Mack is a wonderful coach. He's doing a great job of turning things around, but this is not the year for him to make the NCAA tournament, and Louisville will fall short of making the postseason for the Big Dance.
I think they get in the tournament. I just have that much faith in Chris Mack being able to get the best out of these guys. And while I don't disagree with any of your assessments, I do think that he is going to find a way to get, like, there's enough talent on this roster to be able to get to a tournament, right? If you put all the pieces together the right way. And I think Chris Mack is going to be able to figure it out. That doesn't mean I think he's getting to the Final Four. Doesn't mean I think he's getting out of the first weekend. Doesn't mean I think he's getting in as something more than like an 11 seed. But I do think that he's going to find a way to win enough. He's going to have enough shots in the ACC at home where he's going to be able to get enough wins that I think he'll get it done and get this team dancing. But like you said, it kind of all comes down to whether or not VJ King decides to be the guy that was a five-star prospect, right? Like there was some scuttle that he might end up being a one-and-done kid at some point during his high school development, and he's just never lived up to that. So if he could end up being that guy, I think you're right. Or I think that I'm right, and they'll be a tournament team. If he doesn't end up being that guy and he continues to disappoint, then it's probably a little bit more likely that you are right and they miss the NCAA tournament. Anything else to add?
I think that ACC argument is a double-edged sword, Rob. They're going to have the ample opportunities to pick up those quality wins, but by that same token, they're going to have a difficult time with this gauntlet schedule that the ACC throws at them. If Chris Mack was coaching this Louisville team in a weaker, less deep league, I think they would make the tournament. But with the way the ACC is this year, the experience that's coming back, the veterans, I think that he's still a year away from making a run.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't think either of us are too enamored with this team, but I think they have enough. We'll see. All right, moving on. Miami. Miami actually loses a ton from last season. Bruce Brown and Lonnie Walker both headed to the NBA. Jaquan Newton graduated, and one of the transfers that they were going to be relying on to kind of help bridge the gap ended up getting kicked out of the program in Miles Wilson, who was a transfer from Mount St. Mary's. That said, I think I really like this group, and I think I'm really, really going to enjoy the way that they end up playing this season. It's going to start with their backcourt. They added Zach Johnson, a grad transfer from Florida Gulf Coast, to team up with Chris Likes, who is probably going to end up being one of the like top three or four most entertaining players in the ACC this season. He stands about 5'7", but he's a scorer and he's a big time shooter. And the kid's got some stones on him. Like, he took over some games down the stretch last year. He's a really, really good player that I think probably was overlooked coming out of high school just because of the fact that he's 5'7", and that might even be a little bit generous. At center, they have a former five-star prospect named DeJuan Hewell, who I think is going to continue to develop into one of the better big men in the ACC this season. And then around those guys, you have a handful of guys that could just really, really shoot the ball. Dejan Vasilevich, I don't know how to say his last name, but he's a kid from Australia that can really, really shoot. Thing I love about him is he looks like he's chubby, so it's kind of like me out there, raining threes. You have Sam Wardenburg. You have Anthony Lawrence, who started last year at the four. And the way that I see this kind of playing out for Miami is that this team ends up kind of going back to what they were in 2013 when Jim Larrañaga used Shane Larkin, kind of has the star of his team, and got that group. I believe they won the ACC that year and made it to the Sweet 16. And I kind of see that happening again. I think they're going to end up being a very, very ball screen heavy team. I think you're going to have three shooters on the floor at all times. And I think you're going to have situations where you are basically playing 2-on-2 with Chris Likes or Zach Johnson and DeJuan Hewell running ball screens. And I just like Jim Larrañaga's odds of being able to win that battle right there. With three guys around the perimeter that shoot 43% from three, a really good dynamic lead guard, and a guy that can go up and catch lobs and dive to the rim in DeJuan Hewell, I think that is going to end up being a very, very efficient offense for this group. I don't know how good they're going to end up being on the defensive end of the floor. I think that's going to be a little bit of a red flag, but I don't think you have to be great defensively when you're going to be as efficient as I believe they will be on the offensive end. So my bold prediction for this team is that they're going to end up getting to the tournament, and I think they're actually going to be a better team this year than they were last year, despite losing Bruce Brown, despite losing Lonnie Walker, despite losing Jaquan Newton, because you're not going to have so much competition for minutes. You're not going to have so much competition for shots in the backcourt. You're going to have a better hierarchy of who is going to be the star and who's going to get shots when and whose role is going to be what. And you're going to have better shooters, so the floor is going to be better spaced. I really like the way that this roster is coming together. I think they're a borderline top 25 team. I know you have them, I believe it's ninth in your ACC power rankings. I think that they're in that same mix as like Florida State and Virginia Tech and Syracuse and Clemson, as that second tier of teams behind Duke, Virginia, and North Carolina. So I think that they are a tournament team. I think they're a borderline top 25 team. What do you think?
I totally agree with you, Rob. And as you mentioned, the gap between teams 4 through 9 or 10 in the ACC is really minimal. A lot of these teams can really be in the top 25 conversation for preseason. And I think Miami just had some bad luck last season. That roster didn't really fit together. They had that kind of weird period where they were getting Lonnie Walker into the mix and trying to figure out where his shots would come. And Bruce Brown was trying to figure out when to take over games with all the hype he received in preseason. So now that Chris Likes has kind of taken the reins with this team, and they've got the veterans around him who shoot, who defend, and who are, you know, experienced pieces on the interior, I really like what this group has to offer, and especially bringing in a veteran like Zach Johnson who can help ease the burden off of Likes a little bit.
Yeah, I'm really into this team this year, and I think that they'll be a sixth seed in the tournament. I'm calling my shot there. Let's move on. Scott, tell me about North Carolina State.
This NC State team in year two of Kevin Keats' reign will look markedly different than last season's team. Only three returning scholarship players, all of which had significant starting minutes last season. Braxton Beverly, Torin Dorn, who plays kind of that small ball four role for the Wolfpack, is also back. And Markel Johnson is back as well. So you have some experience on the perimeter. You have Torin Dorn there at the four, who should be able to provide some stability there. But besides for that, this is an entirely new roster for the Wolfpack. They have a lot lot of transfers who sat out last season, guys like C.J. Bryce and Devin Daniels, who are going to be huge pieces for their backcourt this year. Kevin Keats likes to run that small ball lineups where he has a guy like Torin Dorn at 6'5" playing at the four. So he's going to have a lot of opportunities to mix and match all these elite level guards on his roster. So even though he has Markel Johnson and Braxton Beverley returning, expect guys like Bryce and Daniels and Blake Harris, a transfer from Missouri, to earn significant minutes, because this is going to be a very guard heavy operation this season. We should see plenty of shots from all those guys. The front court is where things really start to get interesting. Derek Funderburk has an opportunity to receive heavy minutes there. He was a former top 100 prospect who went JUCO and was the best JUCO prospect in the country in the eyes of some, so he should be ready to play. He's a 6'10" agile sophomore who really can move quite a bit and should be able to defend in space and ball screen situations, but he is unproven in terms of the high college level, so it's going to be a big question in terms of what NC State is able to provide in the interior. And Wyatt Walker is a transfer from Samford who should be able to provide some stability as well. He formerly led the Southern Conference in rebounding as a sophomore, so he should be able to at least help on the glass a little bit. And again, I think the big thing with NC State is that they have to get these guards playing together in harmony, and that's going to be a major question mark for this team. You have Johnson and Beverly, who know each other so well. You have Bryce and Daniels, who played with this team last year, but are obviously going to require quite a bit of shots. And I think seeing those guys all come together is going to be the major key for NC State season. And that's why I think they fall a little bit short of expectations. I think they ultimately don't make the tournament this year. Their front court's not deep enough. These guys are still going to be figuring themselves out in terms of their perimeter. And my bold prediction is that they actually fall short of the tournament this year, despite having a more talented roster.
I love NC State this season, but I get what you're saying and I get your argument. Kevin Keats, when he was at UNC Wilmington, the team that he built was super guard heavy. I remember they played a kid named Chris Flemings at the four, who was 6'5", probably all of 175 pounds. He ended up winning CAA Player of the Year, and that's what this roster is going to be like. You know, they played, it wasn't quite Shaka Smart's havoc, what he did at VCU, but they press, they try to force turnovers, they want to shoot threes, they want to play up tempo, and they want to create as many mismatches as possible. And I think he has the guards to be able to do that. I mean, he's probably got 7, 8, 9 guys that can play perimeter minutes for him this year. You didn't even mention Jericho Helms, who is a 4-star prospect who kind of fits really well as like that 4 in the system that they want to run. The problem, like you mentioned, is that they don't have a shot blocker and they don't have an elite rebounder. I know Wyatt Walker was able to get it done at, was he at Samford?
Yeah, he was at Samford.
Samford. Yep. So I know he's able to get it done there. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be a great rebounder in the ACC. I think it would have helped if Emmanuel Bates hadn't hurt his shoulder, but it looks like he's going to end up having to redshirt the season to recover from shoulder surgery. I just don't know if they're going to have the shot blocking and the rebounding to be able to do what Keats wants to be able to do defensively. And the reason why is when you're kind of gambling on the defensive end, you need that shot blocker, kind of like what Sagaba Konate does for West Virginia, right? You need that shot blocker if you're gambling, you need somebody at the rim to make it so that a layup is not a guarantee. If you have a lot of guards, you need somebody in the paint who is an absolute monster on the glass, because at the other four positions on the floor, you're probably going to be outsized and you're going to be susceptible to giving up offensive rebounds. And I don't know if NC State necessarily has that guy this season. So I get what you're saying, but I think I'm going to bet on Kevin Keats. I'm going to bet on the talent on the roster and think that I have him in my preseason top 25. So I think that NC State is going to be able to get the job done. I see what you're saying, though. Anything else to add?
No, again, I think that this is going to be a really fun team to watch. They're going to want to get up and down the floor. And if Kevin Keats wants to play that small ball style, this is probably the year to do it. You have teams like Duke who are going to end up playing small ball. North Carolina is not going to play the too big style that Roy Williams traditionally likes to play. So I think a lot of the teams, in terms of the style of play, are going to match what NC State's trying to do this year. And it's not going to really affect them in terms of facing a lot of teams with two bigs who could hurt them.
So you mentioned North Carolina, which is the team that I'm going to talk about next. The Tar Heels lose Joel Berry and they lose Theo Pinson, both of whom are really going to hurt what they want to do on the offensive end. Before I get into that, let's talk a little bit about what they do have coming back. They have Luke May coming back, who's going to end up being, he might be a first-team preseason All-American. They bring back Cam Johnson. They bring back Kenny Williams, who are going to be able to space the floor. Really, really good shooters. They bring back the trio of Sterling Manley, Garrison Brooks, and Brandon Huffman, who are going to be able to, in some sort of platoon system, man that five spot. That kind of, you know, that Roy Williams has really prioritized in the past, the Kennedy Meeks role, the Sean May role, the, you know, that spot. And they also add some really promising freshmen in Nazir Little, who has a chance to be a top three pick, who's kind of like a, I'm sure you've seen him more than me, Scott, so tell me if I'm wrong here, but he's kind of like an athletic guy with long arms. It's a combo forward that is probably a little bit better on the defensive end and on the glass than he is offensively, but over the course of the past year, part of the reason he went from being a guy that was like a, you know, like a fringe five-star prospect to a guy that could end up being the best prospect in the class, not named RJ Barrett, is because he's added a little bit offensively and he's become more of a scoring threat, and he's kind of grown into this guy where you look at him and say, okay, that is a switchable wing. That is a guy that can guard 2 through 4 in the NBA while also being able to make threes. Am I right on that?
Yeah, definitely. He really ascended his senior year and became a more versatile, well-rounded player where he could actually take some shots on the perimeter and actually take some guys off the bounce from the perimeter, which is something he wasn't showcasing before. He's a little bit of an undersized four.
And then they also add Kobe White, who I believe is the leading scorer in the history of North Carolina high school basketball.
I think he is. He can really score, that's for sure.
He scored a ton of points. He's kind of like that lead guard, combo guard role. And that is where things are going to get really interesting for this group. So losing Joel Berry hurts, right? And everyone's going to say that Joel Berry was the point guard for that team last year because he was the guy that had the ball in his hands. But he was more of like their scoring guard and their go-to guy offensively, while Theo Pinson is the person that kind of played that point guard role for him, right? Like Theo Pinson ended up averaging more than 5 assists a game last year. He led the team in assists. And once North Carolina got into their offense, it kind of ran through Theo more than it ran through Joel Berry, which is why I am kind of bullish on Kobe White being able to step in and be at least adequate replacing Joel Berry this year. Like if you look at the best point guards that Roy Williams has had, they all kind of fill that same role, right? Like Ty Lawson, Raymond Felton, even someone like a Marcus Paige, Joel Berry. These guys were point guards by definition, but they were more scoring guards and combos in terms of the way that they played within that system. And I think Kobe White can step in to do that. I don't know if he'll be able to be as good as Joel Berry as a freshman, because it's very hard to be as good as Joel Berry was over the course of the last 2 or 3 years. But I think he'll be good enough that it's not necessarily going to be the weakness. My question is going to be, who do they run offense through? I think that they're going to miss Theo Pinson more this season than they are going to end up missing Joel Berry, because I just don't know who's going to be that creative outlet. Like Nazir Little, as good as he is, he doesn't have the versatility and the ability to be a playmaker the way that Theo Pinson did at his size. Like not many people do. That's what made Theo Pinson so valuable to North Carolina last season. So that's why I kind of look at this group. And I know that they're a top three team in the ACC on paper, and I know that they're going to enter the season as a preseason top 10 team, but I think they're going to look a little bit more like the North Carolina team from Marcus Paige's freshman year. I don't know if you remember that group, but they ended up going like 22-9 overall, and I think they won 12 games in the ACC that year, but they were an 8 seed heading into the NCAA tournament and ended up losing in the second round that year. And I think that that's kind of what this group is going to end up being. It's going to look a little bit more disjointed. They're not going to be quite as smooth and free-flowing offensively. And I think by the end of the year, they're going to end up somewhere as like a 6 or a 7 seed and be closer to like a team ranked in the 20 to 25 range than a team that ends up being ranked in the top 10.
Yeah, I could see this team having some growing pains as well because they have to replace so many key roles, as you mentioned, Rob. And they're hoping a guy like Rashawn Black, another freshman, top 100 prospect from that class, can help kind of provide that versatility, that jackknife mentality that Theo Pinson gave, but Black has shown that he's far too inconsistent at the high school level to be counted on to be ready to play heavy minutes in the ACC this year. So he's talented. He's got the look of a potential Pinson down the line, but I don't know if you could ask of him to really be that guy this season. And, you know, you're going to expect some development from some of their bigs as well. You know, guys like Garrison Brooks and Sterling Manley, Brandon Huffman, who should be better than last season, but yeah, I think a lot of this is going to fall on the freshmen, and having guys like Little and White produce right away and being able to score and provide the numbers and the lift that guys like Barry and Pinson are going to be, you know, missed now on the roster.
Yeah, and I also kind of think that this team is going to end up playing a lot of small ball. And as good as the that trio of sophomore big men is going to end up being, I think that the go-to lineup for Roy Williams will end up being Kobe White, Kenny Williams, Nazir Little, Cam Johnson, Luke May. I think that's the lineup that we're going to end up seeing. And I don't know if that team's going to be able to defend at a very high level, at least not high enough to make up for the fact that I think they're going to be a little bit more offensive deficient than they have been in the past. Let's move on. Scott, talk to me about Notre Dame.
Notre Dame's going to be an interesting group this year, and obviously Mike Bray has had a lot of veterans to work with over these past few years, but losing Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell and Martin Niskeben is going to really hurt this team, because this is a Notre Dame group outside of their backcourt is going to rely on a lot of new faces and freshmen. So, you know, again, the backcourt of Rex Pfluger and TJ Gibbs is the strength here. Gibbs really emerged as one of the ACC's better scorers last year. Now that Colson and Farrell are gone, especially, he's going to be counted on to be the team's go-to scorer, and he should be able to fill that role. He's going to have a lot of big games, but he doesn't have a lot of help around him in terms of proven guys. And Rex Pfluger's a really solid two-way guard, a senior who is one of the tougher defensive players in the ACC, but he's never really figured it out on the offensive end in terms of consistency from a shooting perspective, and that has ultimately hurt a Notre Dame team that would love to stretch the floor and bomb threes as often as possible. But luckily for Mike Bray, he did bring in reinforcements in terms of shooting with this freshman class, which has four four-star prospects. Nate Lazuski should be able to stretch the floor at around 6'10". He's an interesting piece to work with. Prentice Hubb is a former four-star prospect himself who is a guard who should be able to you know, help play a little bit of point. He'll shoot a little bit. Dane Goodwin's a shooter, 6'6", from Ohio. And they have Robbie Carmody, who's a kind of a Pfluger type, a tough two-way guard as well. And Juwan Durham, a transfer from UConn, is going to play a huge role on this team on the interior now that Gebben is gone. Elijah Burns should see more minutes as well. And a guy to keep an eye on in terms of throughout this entire season is going to be DJ Harvey, a former highly touted top 50 recruit who missed most of last season with injury. He has not been cleared yet, to my knowledge. And I think that monitoring his health and seeing him potentially become a third scorer or a small ball four for this Notre Dame team is going to see how tough this team is by the end of it, because again, they're relying on a lot of new pieces. They've got Gibbs and Pfluger in place. They have some guys who can shoot, but I don't think they have the big men or really the types of players that can compete with a lot of these teams in the ACC. So my bold prediction, for as good as Mike Bray and this program has been over the last few years, I think they're in the bottom third of the ACC, and they're gonna have a lot of growing pains this year.
I agree. I think that they end up outside of that second tier of teams that we think, you know, like the Miamis and the NC States and the Florida States and all those guys. I think they're a cut below that. That said, I would not be surprised in the least to see Mike Bray figure out a way to get this team to the NCAA tournament. That is just what he does. Although I would probably say that they are a year away from actually getting that done. I don't think I have anything else to add to you.
No, Pfluger's really the only senior on this roster. So as you said, Rob, next year is the year to really watch for this team. But they could surprise some people and get some wins this year, especially if Gibbs gets rolling.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. Let's move on to Pittsburgh. Jeff Capel takes over a Pitt program that went winless in the ACC last season under Kevin Stallings. Jared Wilson Frame and Shamil Stevenson are both back. Capel went out and added a couple of pretty solid pieces. He got St. John's transfer Malik Ellison. He got Sidé Nadir from New Mexico State. I hope I pronounced that right. And he added a couple of four-star guards that ended up enrolling early after reclassifying in Trey McGowan's and Audiese Tony. I think that's how you say it. I'm really bad with names. Sorry. I'm sorry, RDA, say if I got that one wrong. And he also added former Nebraska commit Xavier Johnson. But all of the dudes on this roster are some combination of young, inexperienced, or not really all that good. And I think that Jeff Capel has gotten a little bit of a bad rap for his coaching ability because of the way that things ended at Oklahoma without people recognizing the fact that he actually built Oklahoma into like a top two seed the year that they had Blake Griffin and the year that they ended up making the Elite Eight. So I think he's going to find a way to get things done. I'm actually bullish on this team. I think the Capel magic works, momentum builds, and Pitt gets out of the basement and finishes 14th in the ACC, one spot ahead of Georgia Tech and one spot behind Wake Forest.
Yeah, I like what Jeff Capel did this offseason. He didn't have a lot to work with what Kevin Stallings left him. He didn't have a lot of scholarships in terms of guys that he could go out and get right away. So he convinces guys like Trey McGowan and Tony to reclassify up a year to play right away. Gives the program a little bit of a boost in terms of their talent level. And not a lot of expectations for the season, but at least some pieces to work with for the future.
Scott, talk to me about the most interesting team in this conference this year, Syracuse.
This team is fascinating, Rob. And again, a team that made a surprising Sweet 16 run last year. Not a lot of people wanted them in the tournament once again, but as we've seen with Syracuse in the past, they didn't really care what the outsiders had to say. They made that Sweet 16 run based on defense and grinded out games, and they should have a lot more help in the form of depth this year. A lot of those guys were logging heavy minutes last year. Tyus Battle returning after his flirtation with the NBA draft was really what set this team in motion to have a potential Sweet 16 or Elite Eight run again this season. He's going to be a potential first-team All-American this year. Battle averaged around 20 points a game last year on a team that really couldn't score besides him. So he should have some more help this season. I'm expecting big numbers out of him. He's going to be one of the better players in the ACC, if not the country, and he's somebody that you're happy to have to build around. And he's going to have some help in the form of sophomore O'Shea Brissett, who had a really promising freshman year, especially down the stretch. Showed a lot of versatility at 6'8", can pop out and hit some threes, can put up a near double-double on the glass. He's going to have to improve his efficiency a little bit, but he's a guy that could turn into a secondary scorer. Frank Howard, the third scorer of that trio, is back, who played really steady at point guard last year. He's a senior who logged heavy minutes, and again, not the best in terms of shooting percentages, but he's a guy who can fill it up from time to time if he gets hot. And they also return the front court pieces of Pascual Chukwu, who's the 7-2 center who is very experienced in that 2-3 zone and knows what he's doing as a rim protector. And then Marek Dolzak is really produced in terms of being a glue guy and really stepped up last season and earned a lot of minutes and did a lot of the little things that Syracuse asked of him to make them a better team overall. And those five were really the guys that they rode last year, Syracuse, to that Sweet 16 run. And this year they should get significantly more help. They have a freshman class that includes four-star guard Jalen Carey. He should be able to slide in and play a little bit of both spots. Robert Braswell provides some athleticism at the forward. Buddy Boeheim, Jim's son, is a freshman guard as well. He's a floor spacer who is a legitimately solid player who should be a rotation piece for the Orange these next few years. So a lot more shooting with this team that should hopefully help their woeful offense from last season. And we know how good this defense is, especially that 2-3 zone that seems to befuddle teams in the tournament for some reason, as if they haven't seen a zone all season. But my bold prediction, I think Syracuse makes it back beyond the Sweet 16 and goes to the Elite Eight. I love the makeup of this group. I love that they have more depth. They have a star in Tyus Battle, and I really like what Jim Boeheim is bringing to the table this season.
I agree with you. I think it's important to note that Syracuse finished last season ranked in the top five in KenPom's defensive efficiency metric. Like, they are legitimately really, really good defense. What they do playing a 2-3 zone is not all that different from what Virginia does to teams playing their pack line defense. Like, it's just, it is that good. And what makes it so difficult is the amount of length and the amount of size that they have. They put 2 6-foot-6 guards that are athletic at the top of the zone. They have 2 6-foot-8 or 6-foot-9 guys on the wings that they push up a little bit higher than normal. It almost ends up being like a 2-2-1 with a 7-foot-2 guy around the rim. And what happens is, because of all that length, they take away the pass to the high post. They take away a pass to the corner, to the short corner. They take away a lob at the rim because they have a 7-foot-2 guy there. And the only thing that ends up being available is you can swing it around the perimeter or you could throw the ball into the post. And I think the most telling stat about them is that Syracuse held opponents to just 31.8% shooting from three, which was 17th nationally last season. But they forced their opponents to shoot 44.5% of their field goal attempts from beyond the arc, which is the highest percentage of any team in the seven high major leagues. What that means is that everybody knows going in that you can't shoot threes against Syracuse because they have so much length, and because you're going to end up swinging the ball around the perimeter, you're not going to get an in-rhythm shot where you're stepping into it. But they're so good at what they do defensively that they force you to take that three anyways. So that's why they are so good defensively. And my concern with them, and part of the reason I'm a little wary of this idea that all of a sudden, like, oh, they have more depth and oh, they have more scoring options for to take some of the weight off of Tyus Battle, is that I don't see how you get those guys on the floor without taking away what they do best, which is their defense, right? Like, Buddy Boeheim's going to get out there and because he can play at the top of that zone. So there's going to be times where he can go out there and just be the shooter and the floor spacer, and he's going to take a little bit of the weight off of Tyus defensively, because I think that he's still going to be able to provide that defensive lift that they need. But Jalen Carey is like a 6'3" freshman. Like, Jalen Carey and Elijah Hughes have had a bunch of hype over the course of, you know, the summer and the offseason in terms of what they're going to be able to contribute. But I don't know if Syracuse is as good defensively when they have Jalen Carey on the floor. I don't think that he's going to necessarily be a better offensive weapon than what Frank Howard. Yeah, than what Frank Howard ends up being. I don't think that he's necessarily going to be a better option than what Frank Howard was offensively. But the problem is, if you bring him in and then maybe push Frank Howard to the three and take Merrick Dolezal off the floor, then all of a sudden you lose a little bit of that length on the wings, right? So I just wonder if they're going to be able to play with more depth and get better offensive players on the floor without actually hurting what they do best, which is their defense. So while I do think they're good, I do have them ranked 19th in the country, I do think that they are a legitimate threat to get to the Final Four. I just wonder how much of all this talk about they've added more depth and, you know, they're actually going to be able to use some bench. And here's the other thing about it. Like, Jim Boeheim never uses his backcourt, right? Like, he never uses his guards. I think the last time that they didn't finish in the top 300, or the last time they finished in the top 300 of bench minutes, right? Not out. Usually they finish outside the top 300. Last time they finished inside the top 300 was the 2011-2012 season. And that's when Deion Waiters, who was the number 4 pick in that year's draft, and Michael Carter Williams, who was the number 11 pick in the next year's draft, were both coming off the bench for that Syracuse team. So that's what it requires for Jim Boeheim to actually use his bench, to have two lottery picks on his bench. And as good as Jalen Carey is, as good as Elijah Hughes is, they are not lottery picks. So I just wonder if maybe we're reading a little bit too much into it, and whether or not this team is actually going to have that many more weapons offensively. That said, as long as they end up being a top five defense, Tyus Battle ends up being the guy that he is, and O'Shea Brissett takes a little bit of a step forward, maybe Merrick Dolezal takes a step forward as well, they're going to be a really good team. They're probably going to finish in the top 75 in offensive efficiency. They're still going to be a top five defense. That's going to be good enough to get them in the conversation for the top 20, top 25, and is going to put them within striking distance of getting to the final weekend of the season. I'm a little bit hesitant to fully buy in on the hype train, because I just don't know if all the pieces are going to fit together perfectly. I know that was a long rant, but anything else to add?
No, I think you definitely hit the head on a lot of their question marks. And I think as long as guys like Tyus Battle and Brissett and Frank Howard are not averaging 38, 39 minutes a game, and they can just get 5 minutes off of that, I think that saves their legs so much for March and gives those guys the additional offensive boost they're looking for. Maybe the bench isn't as good, but if they get those starters the rest they need to have better offensive stretches of play, then I think that it'll be more than worth it for Syracuse.
All right, let's move on to another team that is going to be elite defensively, but maybe not all that exciting on the offensive end of the floor, and that is Virginia, who last season, as the number 1 overall seed, lost in the first round to number 16 UMBC, which is going to be something that hangs over the head of this team and this program for a long time. And I think the biggest story of the season in the ACC, aside from maybe Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett, is how Virginia reacts to that. Like, having being associated with being like maybe the biggest choker in the history of college basketball is not necessarily the best way to build the confidence of a team. So
history is sports, you could argue.
Yeah, history is like this is just it's not something that you want to be associated with, and how this group of players responds to that, I think, is going to say a lot, or is going to determine what this season ends up being. But let's get beyond that kind of like narrative, trying to psychoanalyze the players on the roster, because I think that in terms of how this roster is put together is really, really interesting, and I want your take on this. I'm actually really curious what you think. So they lose Devin Hall, right? And they lose Isaiah Wilkins. Devin Hall was kind of like they're the guy that could create off the bounce and the guy that they ran off screens a little bit and was probably their best perimeter defender in terms of being he's 6'5", 215 pounds, strong, physical. Isaiah Wilkins was one of the single best defenders in all of college basketball last season in terms of, you know, being able to protect the rim and being able to move his feet and be switchable. So those are both going to be big losses. But they do return a couple of really good pieces in their backcourt, and Kyle Guy, who has a chance to be an All-American, and Ty Jerome, who is actually getting a little bit more NBA hype than I think people realize. I think there's an outside chance he could end up being a late first or early second round pick whenever he goes to the NBA. While Mamadou Diakite, I think, should be able to at least adequately fill in Isaiah Wilkins' role defensively, which means on the surface, Virginia should once again be a like top five, top 10 defense. They're going to be really, really good on that end of the floor. The thing about them is they got this kid named DeAndre Hunter, who is a guy that could end up being a lottery pick, could end up being a top five pick, could end up being a first team All-American this season. And I think what determines that is going to be where he ends up playing. The question to me is, can he play the four? Not is he capable of playing the four, but given Virginia's roster, is he going to be able to actually play that position on the floor? With Devin Hall and Nigel Johnson graduating, there is a complete lack of backcourt depth on this roster. Outside of Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy, the Virginia backcourt consists of a pair of incoming freshmen in Kahi Clark, I don't know if I said that right, and Cody Statman, neither of whom were thought of as immediate impact players, and sophomores Marco Anthony and Francesco Badocci. Anthony played 13 games last season, and Badocci did not play. And that matters because Hunter, in terms of his fit with this Virginia program, he's best at the four. He's 6'7" with a 7'2" wingspan, and he's strong enough to be able to guard fours. He's got the quicks to guard guards if he has to. Like, he could play the three, but he's at his best if you can kind of put him in that combo forward four role. And that's because he can make threes, he can tackle off the dribble, he becomes a little bit of a mismatch problem. He is like that prototype skilled playmaking four. And I think what we saw, part of the problem with what happened with UMBC in that loss is that when DeAndre Hunter was out with the broken wrist, we saw what happens when teams could spread out Virginia. And I think there are a lot of teams in the ACC this season that are going to be able to spread you out. And they need to have DeAndre Hunter at the four to be able to make that work. But do they have the backcourt depth to make that happen? I do not know. And I think that the ceiling for what Virginia could end up being is going to be somewhat limited if Clark or Statman or Anthony or Badocci, whoever ends up being, if they cannot find somebody to let DeAndre Hunter slide in at that four spot, then I think that Virginia is going to end up being another team that is going to end up being another season where the Cavaliers look really, really good throughout the regular season, get to the tournament, run into a bad matchup, and flame out earlier than you would like to expect. And I guess that's what my bold prediction is actually going to end up being. So, Scott, talk me through a little bit about how you feel about Virginia and whether or not you think DeAndre Hunter can play the four for them.
I don't think in an ideal world you have DeAndre Hunter at the four if you're Virginia. I think you have him at the three and you try to go bigger with Jack Salt or Diakite at the four and you try to figure things out from there. But yeah, Virginia doesn't have a lot of depth to work with, particularly on the perimeter, so they have to figure out what's going to be most effective for them. And I think Hunter at the four is ideally what you want to have, but given the roster limitations, given how well Diakite played down the stretch last year, and given how good that lineup would be defensively, I think that that's one we'll likely see, and we'll likely see Tony Bennett try to figure out where to put Hunter and utilize him best, because they need him to be that lottery pick type of talent to really maximize their ceiling this season.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's going to end up having to play the three, whereas I think for Virginia to really reach their ceiling, you need DeAndre Hunter playing at the four. And I think that's going to be the crux of the issue for Virginia throughout the year. But we can move on. Scott, tell me about Virginia Tech.
This is another intriguing team that returns most of their core lineup from last season, only losing Justin Bibbs. And, you know, a lot to like with this Hokie group. Buzz Williams has done a commendable job of turning them into a consistent basketball powerhouse. The goal now is to actually win a game and make a run in the NCAA tournament. The Hokies have made the last two NCAA tournaments. They've lost in the first round of each, and really sustaining success and building on March appearances is what Buzz Williams has to do next with this program. But he's got the pieces and the veterans to be able to make a little bit of a run this season. And it starts with Justin Robinson at the point guard position, one of the most underrated guys in America in terms of his efficiency and setting up other guys, making sure others are getting shots. This is a Virginia Tech offense that led the ACC in field goal percentage and three-pointers last season. They can really put up points in a hurry, and they have a lot of different weapons to do so. And Robinson really does a nice job of spreading it around and getting a lot of others involved. And he'll have plenty of help this year in the form of guys like Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who should see a spike after a really promising freshman season. He could be a guy that's on NBA teams' radars sooner than later, and could be a guy that really ascends into Virginia Tech's go-to scorer if a lot of the things go right for him this season. And Ahmad Hill is also back on the wing. He's a double-figure scorer who shot above 40% from three-point range. The front court's really going to be the thing to watch this year. Kerry Blackshear and Chris Clark were finally healthy together last year and got to play a little bit together, and I think that they are both promising players who provide a lot, especially offensively, to what Virginia Tech is trying to do. Defensively is where I have some question marks. Obviously, this team can put up points. They can figure things out in terms of what they're doing on the offensive end, but defensively and rebounding, there's been some struggles at times, and I really want to see more consistency out of this group in general in terms of their approach on the defensive end, and should have more depth this year. Kadeem Sy and Ty Outlaw are both back after redshirting last season. Both of them were rotation players before they were hurt, so these are guys that should provide an adequate lift to the Virginia Tech second unit that they were missing a little bit last year. Wabisa Beattie should be back as well, a sophomore point guard who had a little more acclaim than in terms of what he actually ended up performing to the level of last year, but he could turn into a solid third guard as well. And ultimately, my bold prediction is I think Virginia Tech actually wins a couple games in the NCAA tournament this year. I love the makeup of this group. You need to be able to score in March, and I think they have a lot of different guys who can take over a game and really heat up here.
Would your opinion of Virginia Tech change if you knew that Kadeem Sy had actually left the program?
No, not at all.
Yeah, he transferred to a junior college. I don't think it's that big of a loss, but I think you hit the nail on the head. To me, kind of comes down to whether or not, like, some of these sophomores, you know, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, like you mentioned, Wabisa Bede and P.J. Horn, if they can kind of have a little bit of a breakout year, then I think that we're looking at Virginia Tech potentially being a top four seed in the tournament. And I think that they have the inside track to being the fourth best team in the ACC behind, obviously, Duke, Virginia, and North Carolina. I think we can move on from there. We're going to finish things up with Wake Forest. Wake went 4-14 in the ACC last season, and they bring back three scholarship players. Brandon Childress and Shondi Brown are probably the only two that you've heard of. They do have a little bit of talent coming in. Jalen Horde is really good. He's a 6'8" French import, and I think he's got a little bit of one-and-done potential. Isaiah Mucius is another guy that is a top 100 prospect, but with Bryant Crawford and Darrell Moore heading to the NBA, and Keyshawn Woods now at Ohio State, you're going to have to find someone who is going to be able to score, and you have to find someone that's going to be able to play front court minutes. I don't know who that is. Your guess is probably as good as mine. So my bold prediction is that Wake Forest is once again going to finish in the bottom three of the ACC, and by February, we start talking about whether or not Danny Manning is going to be allowed to return for another season as the Wake Forest head coach.
Yeah, there's not a lot to work with this team, Rob. You know, you hope that guys like Brown make a leap in their sophomore seasons. He had a lot of acclaim coming out of high school as a top 50-ish prospect, but yeah, I just don't see a lot outside of Childress, Brown, and Horde. Horde, I think, has some Kevon Looney type of potential in terms of a wiry double-double threat, but again, I just don't see a lot to work with here.
Yeah, we are on the same page. This is just not a very good basketball team. I think that's really all you need to say.
Danny Manning's in trouble.
All right. Anything else to add before we call this podcast a wrap?
How many teams do you ultimately see making the tournament out of these 14 teams, Rob? I think that's the big question because we have 8 in the preseason top 25. We talked about some other fringe caliber teams who we see as potentially making it. So what's your bold prediction for number of bids that this league ultimately receives?
If I was going to set the over-under, I would set it at 9.5. And I think I would probably take the under. I think that they get 9 teams, and I think that the X factor is going to be whether or not Louisville can find a way to put it all together.
Interesting. I see 10. Louisville obviously is part of that equation. I think Miami is better than people think, and someone's going to end up sneaking in, I feel like. Not necessarily Boston College, but I don't know. Like there's some team that's going to, like Notre Dame, for example, like we talked about with Mike Bray and never counting them out, but I see 10 bids ultimately for the ACC this year.
So here's my thing about that. I think that there are 3 teams that you can just say have absolutely zero chance of getting to the NCAA tournament in Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, and Pitt. I really do not think that Boston College has the horses to be able to get it done. So that's 4
Nor
teams.
Do I.
That's 4 teams right there that we're saying cannot get to the NCAA tournament, right? And I do think that if you look at the top 9, which is the top 3 teams plus Virginia Tech, Florida State, Syracuse, Clemson, NC State, and Miami, I think that all of those 9 are tournament teams, which means that it basically comes down to, do I think Louisville or Notre Dame is going to find a way to get it done? I think Louisville is a little bit more likely than Notre Dame, but I think that that's really what it comes down to. If they're going to get 10 teams, it's going to be Louisville and it's going to be Notre Dame that are kind of on that edge there. And I guess you could probably put Miami and NC State in that conversation as well. I'm just really bullish on what those teams are going to be this season.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's 7 teams that are ridiculously strong that return either the talent to be top 25 teams or have core groups from teams that made Sweet 16 or Elite 8 runs. And this league is going to have some ridiculous depth. There's going to be plenty of opportunities to pick up tournament quality wins. And yeah, it's just going to be a fascinating league from top to bottom this year outside of those bottom 3.
And I think, you know what, come to think of it, I think that might end up being what the determining factor is, right? But you mentioned the top 7. It's the big 3 plus Virginia Tech, Florida State, Syracuse, and Clemson. I think it's very obvious that those are the top 7 teams in the league this year. Are they going to be so much better than everyone else that someone like an NC State and a Miami and a Louisville aren't going to be able to get those wins in conference that they're going to need to be able to have the resume to get themselves an at-large bid, right? Like Miami's going to have to win games at home against those top 7 teams if they want to have a chance to do that. Is Miami good enough to win games that they might not? They're probably going to end up being underdogs at home in those games. So is Miami good enough where they can actually pick off enough of those teams at home to be able to put together a tournament resume that they can show on Selection Sunday and end up being one of those 68 teams? I don't know. I think that's the question, though.
We'll see. I think it's going to be a great year for the ACC. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, fun year. I'm looking forward to it. Scott, I've kept you here long enough, though, man. I appreciate the time. For everybody that is still listening, you can find Scott on Twitter at Phillips Hoops. You can find me on Twitter at Rob Doster. We look forward to seeing you later this week as we break down another conference.